Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome to the show. This is Locked On Heat. I'm Wes Goldberg here, as always, with David Ramil. Finally, it's been a while since we weren't like recapping a game. We had a couple back-to-backs. I feel like it's been a long time, but this is good. We're going to get some stuff out of the air that we needed to talk about. We've got Pat Riley's comments, a few recent comments in a few different places about the future of this team. We'll talk about that. We got some information on Justice Winslow about our boss, David Locke, was able to talk with an NBA scout about Justice Winslow. So we'll play that conversation and kind of react to it a little bit later. But first, we wanted to start with, maybe you've heard of this whole little situation about Phil Jackson's comments about, I don't know if you heard that, but one of my books just fell off the shelf. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. So never mind. That didn't happen. But Phil Jackson's comments about LeBron James and his posse. And we don't want to necessarily scream into the ether about that, but we did want to react a little bit to just to Phil Jackson's overall comments about LeBron wanting special treatment from Pat Riley and the Miami Heat, and just kind of go through that, because everybody else is talking about the other stuff he said.
Right. I mean, the overtones of Jackson's comments have been, you know, obviously explored in great length recently. You know, there's a history there from Phil Jackson where he's come across as being pretty out of touch, you know, from players of today's generation. And his latest comments are certainly evidence of that. But how it ties together to Miami and the context of that particular story and what was actually released to the media is an interesting one, particularly how in an incident at some point during the Big Three era where LeBron James wanted to stay in Cleveland or in the Cleveland area for a particular extra night. And that, according to Jackson, as he relayed to the media, you know, Miami just doesn't do overnights. And so that became an issue as to whether or not, you know, Eric Spoelstra, who was with the team at the time, whether or not he would decide to keep the team there for an extra evening, you know, to follow in line with what LeBron James wanted, and whether or not that was quote unquote preferential special treatment for their star player.
And I know a lot of Heat fans would be like, screw that. No player gets special treatment. Like, and a lot of fans of teams do that, right? You want every player to be treated the same. And that's, you know, we want everybody to be treated the same, right? Everybody has the same rights and opportunities, and you just feel like everybody should be treated the same and fairly. But, you know, I've talked about this on a couple of times where, you know, this is not the first time we've heard of LeBron wanting special treatment, you know, and I've said, like, they probably should have given him special treatment, because if you look at how things played out, he left and went back to Cleveland. Whether or not how much that not getting special treatment factored into him leaving for Cleveland, I don't know, right? I don't know how much he really wanted control. We don't know how much of that special treatment he really needed to stay in Miami, but he's gone, and he's been to two finals since leaving, and the Cavaliers are currently the best team in the Eastern Conference, and the Heat have been in the lottery and look to be in the lottery again two times out of those 3 years. And so you look, you know, hindsight, maybe they should have given him that special treatment. Maybe that would have convinced him to stay, and the Heat wouldn't be where they are now. Maybe they're still at the top of the Eastern Conference, you know?
Well, I mean, and we also should provide some additional context in that, as some people have theorized, that particular overnight stay may or may not have been linked to LeBron wanting to invite the whole Heat organization to spend Thanksgiving night at his house in Akron and to host the team there for Thanksgiving dinner, rather than having to do so in a nearby hotel or traveling somewhere else and having to enjoy or spend Thanksgiving in a hotel. So, I mean, when you think of it from that perspective, it certainly seems like it was the right decision to probably spend the night. We don't know whether or not that's the case. We don't know. We haven't been confirmed. It hasn't been confirmed whether or not it was in context of a Thanksgiving dinner or anything like that. But you also have to consider how, you know, Riley in particular has always been really, really ruthless about how he wants his team to stay focused during the regular season. It goes back to his time with, you know, the Los Angeles Lakers, where he wanted wives, family members, and everything else to kind of leave their husbands alone, guys on the team, during the regular season because that, you know, in his words, they served as nothing but distractions, and he wanted the team focused 100% on playing the game of basketball. And, you know, for better or for worse, a lot of players got burnt out on that, you know, that kind of regimented thinking. And it's also indicative of a world that doesn't exist anymore. You can't stay separated from your family, nor should you. I think a lot of people, psychologists or whatever, will show you that you need that kind of work-life balance, and it's important to be a healthy, well-rounded human being. You know, I think from the fan perspective, a lot of people want to think of us just, you know, or players want to think of players being 100% focused, concentrating just on the game, etc. But the reality is that they're human beings. They live a life outside of that. They have wives and children and all the things that you and I have to deal with on a regular basis. And that applies to them as well, even on a bigger scale because of the amount of money they make. And it's ludicrous to think that they should stay focused the whole time.
More money, you know, more problems.
Yeah, absolutely. And so
it's funny that Phil Jackson says that, right? Like, I know he's more relaying a story, right? But it was weird. And like Carmelo Anthony came out recently. He's like, why is he even talking about LeBron? I don't even get what's happening here. But it's like, you know, Phil Jackson coached Michael Jordan. Did Michael Jordan get special treatment? Yes! See all of his little escapades in Las Vegas. 100% he got special treatment. It's ridiculous. And these players are businesses. And we've heard things like, you know, again, not to dive too much into this, but, you know, Phil Jackson's comments about LeBron's posse, talking about, like, Maverick Carter and these guys, about, like, his posse, but guys that have started and headed up, you know, multi-million dollar businesses now, they're a little bit more than just a posse. They're more than just guys that, like he said, eating Cheetos at his mom's on his mom's couch or something like that. Like, that's not what they're doing. And you do get the sense from Pat Riley, and he's never come out and said this, but you kind of get the sense that he resents, and certainly from Phil Jackson just from these comments, that these kind of old school guys that almost resent the big business that and the brands that these players have become. You can sense that Dwayne Wade almost, in some respect, outgrew just the Heat lifer thing. He was like, I'm more than just this guy who plays on the Heat for 13 and if you want 14 straight years or whatever. Like, I am a brand. I'm a business. I have deserved more than just you thinking that I'm just going to say, all right, whatever you guys got to do, I work for the team. Like, he's got other jobs. He's got other interests and opportunities. And you almost think that either they take that for granted don't appreciate it or almost resent it. And I feel like he's certainly resenting all of this and you know, the way that Chris Bosh has even come out and, you know, on Uninterrupted, just kind of telling his own story. Like, these guys are big, you know, walking brands now. And I do think that they're a little out of touch with it. And I'm not, and I think it's good that Pat Riley is in the position where he is now, a little bit more, you know, 5,000 feet over what's happening, as opposed to on the sideline, like Eric Spoelstra, who you get the sense is more of a player's coach than Pat Riley maybe ever was, right?
Yeah, I'd say that's fair. I mean, I think, you know, look, we've talked before on the show about, you know, Riley's ability to connect and find out details of a player's personal life and things of that sort. And that was part of why he was so successful, was because he was able to not necessarily connect with them, but he was able to stay in touch. And that showed like a humanity, you know, an aspect to him that maybe you don't necessarily consider. But I think there's more to it than that now. Like, the lives of these people have changed.
You gotta, like, you kind of have to give these, you have to give these players more leeway. We can't pretend that these players that played in the 50s and 60s, 70s and 80s, their entire lives were basketball. I mean, players in the 40s, 50s had to get second jobs because the NBA didn't pay that much. Let's not act like all they did was eat, breathe, and sleep basketball. I mean, we look at a guy like, you know, look at the training regimens that these guys take on before, where they were just, you know, they're training all day. They're waking up at 4:30 in the morning to go train, where in the 60s it was like, all right, after the game, let's go to McDonald's and grab a couple of cheeseburgers. Like, that's, you know, so I don't want to, everybody kind of views these old school players as people that only cared about basketball. It's just, no, their whole lives were on social media. You know, before they were just at strip clubs doing blow the whole time. Now it's a little bit different, but I generalize, of course.
Right. Well, that was a pretty big transition from McDonald's to strip clubs and cocaine. But I mean, it's
you've never been to McDonald's with me, then.
No, I did. I don't know what kind of McDonald's is doing. What's McDonald's doing in the Bay Area? But I, you know, it sounds pretty interesting, though. I got to be honest with you.
if you're looking for entertainment outside of McDonald's and doing blow at strip clubs, SeatGeek is the place for you. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to find tickets for that NBA or Miami Heat game that you want to see up close and in person this season. Look, there's nothing like being in the arena for the biggest moments of the season. And with SeatGeek, it's never been easier to experience those moments and to get those seats that you want at a great value. I use SeatGeek. I have the app on my phone. It's by far the easiest way that I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats for any, you know, during the weekend if I want to go to a concert or if I want to go to a basketball game. Like, it's all right there. I'm trying to remember. I was just having a conversation with somebody, and they're like, hey, did you know? Oh, they were like, did you know Nas was in town? He was playing at the Oakland Coliseum. I'm like, I didn't know he was in town. He's like, yeah. He's like, you should see how much tickets are. I wasn't near a computer, and I just whipped out my phone and had my SeatGeek app, and the tickets were right there. I decided not to go because I had other plans that night, but I found a great value for that ticket, and I really thought about it. And that's, like, you can make that just part of what you do. Like, if you ever want to go to anything, SeatGeek makes it easy. You get the best deal on every ticket because SeatGeek price compares for you by searching multiple ticket sites. You don't have to open up 17 different tabs in your web browser. You just say, you know, it does all the work. It saves you time. It saves you money. It's like your own personal ticket secretary. Plus, every ticket you buy on SeatGeek is backed with their 100% guarantee, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Best of all, if you're a listener of Locked On Heat, you can get a $20 rebate off your first SeatGeek ticket purchase. To get that $20 rebate, download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, click add a promo code, enter the promo code LOHEAT, that's LOHEAT. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase, so download the SeatGeek app, enter the promo code LOHEAT today. All right, so kind of going on that that Pat Riley type of track we're going on here. He's had some recent comments. First, I think, with David Aldridge of TNT and NBA.com, and he did mention that the Heat have a draft pick that they plan on using and that they are even looking to acquire another pick possibly. And then recently in a column with Barry Jackson, Pat Riley kind of echoed those same sentiments that they are looking towards the future, even though he was non-committal really on what was happening. He is talking about a process here, you know. So with all of that, we haven't really gotten a chance to talk about it. That's pretty enlightening into his thinking. Obviously, he's been open about the rebuilding process, but for him to say that he's looking to acquire another pick sounds to me like, and obviously he's not committing to anything, but it's like he probably understands and recognizes that the last few times he's tried to acquire a free agent, Kevin Durant, re-signing LeBron, re-signing Dwayne Wade, whoever it might be, he's pretty much struck out, right? LaMarcus Aldridge, he's struck out. So it might be a situation where he's looking at himself and he's saying, look, the free agent thing hasn't been working. I've got to start drafting players. And at this point, even if he's acquiring good players who become stars for this team and lead this team into the next era of Miami Heat basketball, or if they just become strong assets that he uses to trade for somebody, because it's easier to trade for somebody in some cases and is just outright signed these free agents who have all of these options, that seems to be his thinking, right?
Yeah, it's a huge transition for him, for a guy who has traditionally been somebody willing to trade away draft picks because he doesn't really put a lot of value in young players or players that can necessarily come in and take some time to develop if they ever do develop. So it certainly represents a huge shift in thinking for him. And maybe, as you and I have talked about in the past, you know, there aren't the kind of players on this team anymore that you could build around as far as being attractive lures for potential free agents either. You know, you had a player like Dwayne Wade on this team for 13 years, and he was always the mainstay that, you know, free agents would be drawn to. But that player doesn't exist on this team anymore. And so you have to look at, you know, how you'll be able to realistically attract free agents. And maybe Riley does recognize the writing on the wall and says that, you know, that's not something that's a realistic possibility. And so the only way to build this team for the future is through the draft.
It's pretty reassuring for me just because, you know, I've been a little dubious about Pat Riley in general. I don't think that's a secret. And for him to be more realistic, I was afraid that Pat Riley's big magic wand that he wanted to wave was like, no, I'm going to sign one of these free agents one of these times. You trust me. And they were just basically going to play that, you know, 2008, 2009 type of Miami Heat thing where you just keep signing guys on one of your deals and just keep hoping to have this magical salary cap space that one day he'll be able to purchase the next star of the Miami Heat with. And for him to say, all right, no, we got to start looking at these draft picks. We got to start acquiring more draft picks, even though we've lost a lot of them, because that's the way that this team is going to build. Looks to me that he's shifting his focus in the right direction, and it's reassuring because I really don't think that anybody's signing with this team. I just think they have too many options. Like, why is Blake Griffin going to come here? Steph Curry is not going to come here. Like, it's just not going to happen anytime soon. And you have a way easier chance at trading for an all-star at this point. Look at how many unhappy stars there are. DeMarcus Cousins is unhappy in Sacramento. John Wall might be unhappy in Washington. Who knows how long Paul George could put up with the Pacers with in this sort of semi-rebuild that they're doing. It's I think it's going to be easier to go acquire one of those guys and sign them to extensions than it is going to be to make a more of a Shaquille O'Neal type trade than it is to, it's going to be easier to do that than to sign LeBron James. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And he does talk about, you know, looking forward into the future and saying, you know, that whatever assets we have as far, and this is a direct quote, whatever assets we have in the future are going to help us rebuild, whether it's picks, whether it's personnel, whether it's room, meaning salary cap room. So he's clearly looking at all the different opportunities available to help build this team for the future. And he recognizes that that's the key here, that this season is not necessarily going to be a one of legitimate contention. Although he did speak about the 2-8 start to the season and you know how difficult it's been for Miami, but that he's been, you know, buoyed so much a little bit by the play of the current team and what they've been able to do, that he's not necessarily dismayed by the current record, and he thinks that there's, you know, potential there, especially for the young players, and namely Josh Richardson, you know, Justice Winslow, Hassan, Tyler Johnson. These were the people he spoke specifically mentioned by name. So I guess that's where the key is right now for Riley is looking ahead to the future.
Yeah, and I think we're all sort of like shifting our expectations, and it's good that Pat Riley is coming out and almost leading that charge to shift those expectations down a little bit. Yeah, the Heat have played a lot of good teams. And this, like, every team that they've lost to these last six games has had a 500 or better record, right? So, yeah. And all but one of them.
Doesn't Basketball Reference have them as being, like, the most difficult strike to schedule, I think?
So far. Yeah. And all those games except one where they lost by double digits was a close game, right? And this, we make the comparison to the Timberwolves all the time, but this is the same thing the Timberwolves went through last season, where they would be in games just because they're athletic and there's raw talent there. And at the end, when, you know, the veteran play takes over, they would lose games in the final few minutes. And this is just what we keep seeing with the Heat. And that's okay. I keep making this point on Twitter when people are freaking out. It's like, look, this is a young team. This is what they do. This is not unique to the Miami Heat. This is not a Miami Heat problem. This is a young player's issue, and that's what happens when you get veteran players. They learn how to close out games. You heard all that time, like, that got thrown around all the time with the Big Three Heat. Is like, they make big plays. They know how to close games out. They know how to win. You hear that, like, oh, they just know how to win. It kind of sounds like a coach cliche, but it's absolutely true. Like, veteran players know how to win. They understand, you know, what it takes, like, they understand those last couple minutes, those last, you know, 3-4 minutes are very different than the first 40 minutes of the game, you know? And that's what this team needs to develop and learn. And so, but, you know, we digress. Back to the Riley. I think, I don't want to prognosticate and predict too much, but your sense from this, do you feel like the phone lines are open? I'll word it that way.
Regarding, like, making a trade or making a move? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think that's legitimate. I think he's, you know, we've talked about it before. We recognize that he's never been exactly known for his patience, and you know, he's always looking to build a team sooner rather than later. He's made some kind of like the Goran Dragic move in particular, I guess, was within context of that team, that veteran laden team, and, you know, knowing that Chris Bosh was there, that Dwayne Wade was there, et cetera. It was the right move to acquire a player like Dragic, but now that this team is a little younger moving forward, I think he's still looking to build a team. You know, we've heard some rumors that Dragic may or may not be on the trading block, so that's something to consider. And I'm sure he's keeping his options open. I'm sure he's keeping all of them open, to be honest with you. So if that means looking into other teams and seeing whether they'd be willing to trade with players or maybe with a draft pick or something along those lines, I'm sure that they've been doing their due diligence.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. I think that there's going to be, from just the way it sounds, it does seem like this as Riley shifts his focus, the personnel on this team might also shift to more reflect that focus in that new direction. So I'm with you 100%. There could be a move. And the key date to watch is mid-December, right? Because that's when players who signed this summer could start being traded. So that opens up basically half the league almost to start making moves and making trades and just start matching salaries and all that fun stuff. So, all right. Speaking of some of these young players, our boss David Locke, like we teased a little bit earlier, talked with an anonymous NBA scout. And according to David Locke, Justice Winslow is the lowest-rated offensive player in the league. And that's because of his stat he calls PAC, points above average created.
Mm-hmm.
And the way Bossman describes it is, if a player gets 10 scoring point opportunities, or 10 scoring opportunities, which equals field goal attempts or even trips to the free throw line a game, what would an average NBA player score in those opportunities? So right now, that is, I think he's got like 1.08 points per scoring opportunity. And so Winslow right now is at negative 4.7.
Not good.
Yeah. So the way that breaks out is like the average player would score 10.8 points per 10 scoring opportunities. That makes sense. So usually about 3 players are over 3 per season. And Justice Winslow right now is at a negative number. And he's got Winslow at negative 4.7 despite getting 15 scoring opportunities a game. He's also got Deion Waiters as second worst at negative 3.8.
Mm.
Wesley Matthews for the Mavericks is negative 3.5. So, yeah, here's the audio just to that conversation now that we've explained how Locke came to that conclusion. Here that is. Give it a listen.
All right, so you brought up a name earlier. I just have it on my list of guys I'm intrigued by. You know me and my geeky stats. I ran some numbers today. The worst, most negatively impactful offensive player through this part of the season, through about 10 games, is Justice Winslow. Is he going to be all right?
Yeah, he is. He has no problems. He's got a chance because they're giving him chances in Miami. What he ends up doing a lot of times is just that he hasn't been shooting it great. Like maybe he's had 2 games where he's shot the ball really well from 3. And I know one of those games was against Sacramento Kings where he really shot it. But he's a head-down driver. So he is in a situation kind of like the Draymond Green for them where he plays the 4 some. He has the ball in his hands a lot. They've had him, before Josh Richardson came back, they had him bringing up the ball. They felt more comfortable with him bringing up the ball and initiating the offense than they did with Tyler Johnson and put Tyler Johnson off the ball. So he's had I don't know because I'm not as geeky as you, but I'd say his usage rate is pretty high. And so he's not James Harden with the ball. He's skilled, but he's still working through and learning how to play with the ball a lot more. I mean, in high school and even in college, he was a 4 man a lot. He was a 5 in high school. He went to a real small private high school. And so he's working and developing the thinking part of the game, but he has the skills. He's a good defender. I don't think they're too worried about him right now.
Yeah, he's jumped. He went from using, I mean, it's incredible. He went from using about 7 scoring opportunities a game to 15. That's, I mean, doubling your workload is very hard to do in this league.
Yeah, he has a mentality and toughness that I think he'll won't have any issues.
Okay, so obviously David Locke has Winslow, like we said, rated as the worst offensive player in the game this season. But the scout he talked to, you know, he kind of was like us. He's like, hey, this is your stat. I completely understand it, but I disagree. And I think you and I disagree, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's clearly impacting the team in other ways. I can see why You know, Winslow seems like he's such a poor offensive player at this point because the shot isn't falling, because he doesn't earn a significant amount of trips to the free throw. So those are all glaring weaknesses in his game that he's, you know, has to develop at this point. But there are other things that he's doing. It doesn't take into consideration his facilitation, his playmaking. That's the kind of steps forward that we've seen from him that he's taking. He's developing that early on this season. So I think there's still positives to be taken from his impact offensively and particularly defensively as well. He's clearly making an impact on that side. So, you know, that's not to say that what he's doing is great. You know, there are weaknesses there. We've pointed them out on a number of occasions. There are moments there where Winslow hurts the team because he's not able to knock down an easy shot, although he did have a good game against the Bulls a couple nights ago, et cetera. Mm-hmm. You know, but that needs to be more consistent. And we're looking for him to make that continued growth throughout the rest of the year.
Yeah, you know, his usage rate is very, very high, as they pointed out in that clip on the Locked On NBA on that show. Basketball Reference also has Winslow at a -3 offensive box plus minus. So basically, it's similar to what David Locke's stat is, but it takes the average, almost like the average player for a plus minus score, as you would see in a normal box score, and right. Kind of averages it out. An average player would be a 0. And so Justice Winslow's 3 points worse than the average player in plus minus on an average night. And that's what Basketball Reference is saying. So, look, I'm not saying that Justice Winslow is out here being one of the top. I think he is. He does have a negative impact generally on offense. I don't think that's a secret. You know, he hurts the team as far as spacing goes. He doesn't make shots. He's not been good at finishing or perimeter shooting. Like, there's definitely weaknesses there, but like you said, like we saw this in a few games, he'll bring the ball up the court. He's been a facilitator. He's been helping guys in that regard. That helps detract from the spacing issue, because you at least have to defend the guy with the ball, right? You at least have to play that guy with real defense. You can't just ignore him. And that's how the Heat are working through it. But I don't think it's a secret that there's a lot of development to be had on that side of the floor for him. He's tremendous defensively. He's almost 2 points better in defensive box plus minus than the average player. He's one of the elite defensive players in the NBA, but there's still room for improving. I don't think he's the worst. Like, he's not inefficient to the point where he's a high volume scorer that's not scoring a lot. And, you know, he's doing other things to help make up for it. He gets rebounds. He impacts the team positively on a night-to-night basis, as we see from the raw plus-minus every night. That's what that story tells us. But that's kind of my reaction in a nutshell, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's been some discussion, and I'm curious to get your take on it. Do you think Justice is just being used too much? Obviously, the high usage rate, but, I mean, to me, I'm looking at how he's...
Yeah, if the Heat were a contending team, Winslow's being used way too much, but this is a team that needs to find out what he's got, what Josh Richardson can do, what Tyler Johnson can do. I don't think that there's a way to use those guys too much. The point of this season really isn't winning. Like, as much as every Heat fan wants to win, and as much as I want the Heat to win when I'm watching them, as much as the team wants to win these games, as you could see with how close they're playing these games, that's not the point. The point is to see how these guys develop and to give these guys an opportunity to fail. And even Pat Riley has said that in his comments. He's like, I hate to say this, but you have to give them the opportunity to fail. So, yeah, I like seeing Winslow with the ball in his hands. I think he's got so much room to grow, and he's not going to get better at it unless he keeps trying, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's important. Look, and you're right. I mean, with the lower expectations for this season, this is the time to see whether or not he's capable of handling that load. And right now, it doesn't look like he might be, but he's making progress in other areas. And so I think you just have to take the overall package and analyze it that way, not necessarily look at just his offensive impact as far as the shooting and ability to get to the free throw line is.
Yeah, like the scout said, he played center in high school. He played power forward basically in college, and now he's playing small forward in the NBA. But, you know, this is as much as an opportunity for Winslow to learn and develop what he can do as it is for the Heat to learn about what they have with Justice Winslow. Maybe they find out, like, this guy isn't a small forward. He's not offensively polished enough to be a small forward. Maybe this guy is a power forward. I don't know. Maybe that's what they decide at the end of the year. Who knows? All right. Well, that's all we have for today. Thanks to our sponsor, SeatGeek, the friendliest and smartest way to buy and sell tickets. Use the promo code LOHEAT to get $20 after your first SeatGeek purchase, whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. Thank you for listening. Get in touch with the show on Twitter at LockedOnHeat or by email, where you can send us mailbag questions, comments, or sponsorship opportunities. We've got really good mailbag questions for Monday. I'm excited. Okay. That's LockedOnHeat@gmail.com, where you can send all that stuff. And look, if you aren't subscribed already, please do so to get the podcast automatically every day. And then go to iTunes, rate us and review us, and say nice things about us. It helps our position on the iTunes charts, and it helps other people discover the show. And with that, we'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.